Welcome back to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast. This is our Meet the Candidates series, where you get to meet the candidates running for office in this great state of Georgia. Today, our host, Mia Delamar, talks with Rua Roman, House Representative for District 97 in West Gwinnett. Find out everything from her favorite food to how she plans to tackle the issues facing our state. As always, enjoy and don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe for more episodes like this.
Hi, my name is Rua Roman, and I am the House Representative for District 97 in West Gwinnett.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll start off with something fun. So what is, if you could eat one thing for the rest of your life, what would it be?
My current hyperfixation is pad thai for some reason. It's been like the weirdest thing. And my favorite drink right now is just bubble tea. So it's kind of, I've had these like two hyperfixations. I don't know why, but that's where we're at right
Maybe
now.
Maybe we're spiritually connected because that's like one of my favorite meals. I literally have boba all the time.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so do you like peanuts on your pad thai or no peanuts? Because I don't like it.
I go back and forth. Like sometimes I'll eat it without, sometimes I'll eat it with. It just like depends on the day. And if I'm feeling, like if they put it on it, I'm like, okay, great, I'll eat it. But then if I have to put it on, I'm like, I'm feeling kind of lazy. I'm not going to do it today.
So. What's your favorite pad thai spot in Atlanta?
There's actually a spot in my district called Pad Thai. Like, that is literally the name of the
pad thai.
I mean, they obviously serve way more than pad thai, but it is called pad thai.
Awesome. I go to, we have this thing called Thai Palace.
Ooh.
I live in Conyers.
So. I gotta go try it
Thai
out.
Palace is really good. So if you're ever on the east side, going out that way.
Great.
That is a great place. Small business. It's
like
a,
now I'm getting hungry.
A house.
Great.
You know, when they do the restaurant in a house type thing.
Yeah,
it's one of those.
Yeah.
Which is very, very normal for Old Town Conyers.
Yeah.
So. But yeah. Super
well, fun. I was planning on like being good and eating what I meal prep, but I think I might pick up some pad thai tonight.
It's Friday.
So thank you for this.
It's Friday.
Thank you so much for this.
Go get a good meal. So your district covers West Gwinnett?
Yeah. It covers parts of Peachtree Corners, parts of Norcross, parts of Duluth, and all of Berkeley Lake.
Awesome. And so what have been your top legislative priorities, and then what new things are you adding in that you'll be working on now, that you have been working on, that you'll still be working on next year, et cetera?
Yeah, I first ran for office in 2022, my platform centered on four basic pillars, which was education, fully funding it, sort of restoring respect for educators because they are the ones who are teaching, they're the ones on the front lines of all of this. You know, making sure that kids are taken care of holistically.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that was really cool is during session, I actually met with some parents that talked a lot about the literacy problems that we are seeing and how a lot of kids are actually illiterate right now, and it's a big problem. And so, you know, that part on education and then healthcare, expanding access, making sure that we address some of these medical care deserts that we are seeing. So, for example, half the counties don't have an OBGYN, and as more hospitals close, the clinics close, and then it just becomes this terrible race to the bottom. You know, on things like voting rights, ensuring that everybody has consistent access to their ballot box, they know where to go. You know, how do we sort of make this, I feel like a lot of people forget that this is a right that we have, and that, you know, yes, we should be keeping the vote safe and protected, but the reality is that we haven't had voter fraud. So we're literally trying to address a problem that doesn't exist. And there have been a few times in the entire country in our history where there was voter fraud and it was quickly caught and like fixed. And so it's just really strange to me that that has sort of become a big thing. And then last but not least is bridging the economic opportunity gap. And that sort of is where we put a lot of the barriers to entry for success, from everything from increasing public transportation, because then people don't have to afford a car to be able to get to work and then have to decide between paying their bills or their car payment, paying for food or their car payment, things like having a living wage, things like workers' protections and dignity for the worker. And so that's like what I ran on. And then when I got into session, one thing that I sort of really started to focus on is the little pieces, I call them like the crevices of policy.
Yeah.
Where I would go to my colleagues and I would say, I really like your bill or I don't like your bill. Like, I was very honest with them.
Yeah.
But I have recommendations of how to make it better.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, they're actually willing
to work with
you. Because you're not coming at it from a perspective of, I'm just trying to ruin what you've been working on so hard.
Right.
But more from the perspective of, this is what I learned and this is what I've seen. Can we address this particular part of it? So I actually got a bill out of the House this year to make EMS an essential service because it's currently not. It's stalled in the Senate, so we're going to try again next year. And then the other thing I want to work on is specifically related to things on prison reform. Right now, in a lot of, I think, and this is something I'm still trying to track down, because some places say that Georgia doesn't pay its prison population for their labor, and then others
say
we kind of do.
Yeah.
And I think that might be a difference between like federally owned prisons versus state owned prisons
and yeah.
county. Exactly. So for me, it's how do we set a baseline and a living wage? Because if you are going to force people to do labor to afford basic goods and services, then you should be paying them. Like,
right.
it's absurd that we basically have a loophole for slavery
for
in
labor.
The 21st
yep.
century. And so, like, that's sort of one of the things that I've kind of started to lean into a lot more.
And so how do you plan to support our agriculture industry while also keeping environmental concerns at the forefront?
Yeah, so my dad's actually a farmer. He raises sheep and goats and is, I think, working on some honey now or something.
Ooh.
But, like, I've learned a lot through
yeah.
him about, like, the various challenges that happen with the agriculture industry, like, needing to get feed for the animals and how the fluctuating prices are a problem because, you know, you try to figure out what your costs are going to be and you can't properly do that. So how do we, for example, protect farmers from cost fluctuations no matter what they're growing or what they're raising?
Right.
You know, what are some things that we can dig into, particularly as it relates to, like, for example, could we move them towards a solar
mm-hmm.
specific type energy source so they don't have to worry about electricity cutting out? Or are there, you know, water, best practices for, like, water, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, could we get them a sustainable system? Like, how do we connect them? Like, I know with a lot of the Infrastructure Act that was, like, passed.
Yeah,
it's
IRA.
IRA. How do we, like, there's so much green-specific projects, but that could be so beneficial to farmers to make them more sustainable over time.
Right.
And shift them from, you know, to, like, shift them from, like, bad practices to more sustainable practices, but they don't
right.
have the money to do that. So can
right.
we get them those grants? And also, frankly, just anything that will help reduce carbon emissions and, you know, for lack of a better word, reverse the course that we're on. Because, and it seems like people forgot this, but last year, the entire peach crop in Georgia was destroyed
yep.
because of an unexpected cold snap.
Yep.
And so I think sometimes people forget that, oh, this is just, like, such a, like, a lefty, like, whatever, like, nobody cares about the climate.
Everybody thinky.
But you have to care about it
yeah.
because, you know, if you are a farmer and your entire business relies on this crop requires a specific kind of climate, how are you going to be sustainable if you can't even plant at a certain time the way you used to?
Right.
And we're seeing that. We're seeing a lot of farmers switch over to different crops now. We're seeing, you know, our big exports change. We're seeing a lot of those challenges. And while, you know, some of my colleagues are not going to use things like climate change to describe what's happening to them, a lot of them are realizing that what we're seeing is abnormal.
It's an issue.
And how do we go about fixing it and protecting those farmers?
Yeah, and I mean, not to mention that the federal farm bill, this is the sixth year of
mm-hmm.
a plan that should have expired, did expire, but
yep.
we're still under it, and we're still currently in negotiations for
yep.
that on the federal level.
Yeah.
So the entire country worth of agriculture is suffering.
Yep.
And are unable to get certain funds that are coming out of the IRA
yeah.
because that has to be implemented within the federal farm bill.
Yep.
So it's this entire just
yeah.
domino effect
and
of
again,
what happens.
And again, it's like, how do we, and this is why I always tell them, like, there are so many problems that if we just focused on solution-oriented work, I don't think we would have enough time to just, like, do the trendy, like, let me be a flamethrower, like, let me go on this podcast and, like, you know, mouth off or whatever. But, like, I just, for me personally, what I've noticed is that there are so many snags, like you talked about, and they are more, like, bureaucratic than they are, like, flashy, for lack of a better word.
Yep.
And sometimes when you put your head down and you're willing to do some of that work, you can actually do so much
more
for so many people.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear, like, advocacy and explaining to the public what's going on is really, really important.
Important, right.
But we also need both. We need a little bit of both. And when we talk about things like bills that aren't being implemented because of the snag from this other bill, who's talking about that? Like, how are we doing it? How are we fixing it? If you are somebody impacted by this kind of stuff, are you reaching out to your, like, state representative, state senator, your actual senators, your actual members of Congress? Like, I tell people all the time that we try to learn as much as we humanly can. We try to know as much as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, like, a farmer dealing with this, if you're somebody who can't access, like, their Social Security they're entitled to, reach out to us because that's what we're there for. And snags like that, you're basically putting, like, outside pressure on us because then we can say, hey, this actually needs to be prioritized and we can, like, fix it. So that was, like, my roundabout way of saying, like, yeah, this is, like, a terrible thing about government, but simultaneously,
yeah.
there's a lot we can do about it.
To combat it. Absolutely. So how do you plan to address income inequality and support low-income families in Georgia, but also in your district? If you
yeah.
have, that's a big population for you,
yep.
and then how do you address it just in the legislature in general?
My district is so unique because we will literally knock doors in apartments that are falling apart and then knock doors in, like, mini mansions, basically. And the, like, difference in income is just so, so huge. And what I tell people all the time is that people just want to be able to afford to live. And so that's why we talk about a living wage. That's why we talk about, you know, like, how do we help businesses create business models that are sustainable but also take care of the workers? Because frankly, for me, it's, if your small business is built upon, you know, exploiting people, one, that business is not going to last a long time because you're going to keep losing employees. And frankly, that's more expensive for you in the long run. But two, you're doing a huge disservice to the community that you're in because now people are struggling even more just to kind of make this thing happen for you. And so one thing that we can definitely do is, frankly, break up monopolies because then it increases competition. And then that way more businesses can, like, step in and fill in gaps and then be able to take on some of that revenue rather than having, like, the richest of the rich consistently extract wealth from our communities. And so it kind of, like, becomes, because, and the reason I talk about small business, I feel like sometimes you're just, like, stuck in the middle, right? Like, these big corporations might be able to pay a little bit extra and then compete with that small business, and that small business is like, I can't even compete with this, like, I have to close my doors. So how do you fix that? You don't fix it by just, like, giving more money to corporations and be like, hire more people. You fix it by saying, hey, you've gotten too big, you're killing the market. Right. Let people, like, let local businesses thrive, because those local businesses, the money that you give to them is going to go to a soccer team, it's going to go to, like, the local school, it's going to go to a kid, it's going to go to, like, whatever, versus like, you pay a large corporation, it goes to, like, whatever shareholder who's, like, not really doing anything. And so, like, implementing a living wage but also helping businesses pay that living wage and taking care of, like, the person as a whole is really important, which is why I talk about public transportation, because then they don't have to worry about a car to get to work and have to decide between that car payment versus food.
Gas,
health insurance.
Yeah.
You know, people talk a lot about Medicaid expansion, but they don't talk about how that will actually help a small business, because now their employees get health care, and that's one less expense for them to do. And on top of that, Medicaid forces private companies to reduce their costs because now they have to compete with a public program. And so, like, for me, it's like, how do we look at the whole person and help the whole person? Because I feel like that's how you bridge the opportunity gaps in our society, because just throwing money at the problem doesn't work, but money does help it, and you just have to be, like, smart about how you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And how will you address racial and social justice issues in our state?
Yeah, I always tell people that the challenges we face as communities, there are, like, universal challenges that we face, right? But then, when it comes to things like systemic racism, I tell people it's like adding a layer to it, right? Like, it's a picture in color, but it's missing the, like, definition in the shadow. So if you're only talking about, like, this one issue from a very bland lens, you're not going to understand the whole problem.
Right.
Like, absolutely everyone's being exploited, but if you're Black, you're probably less likely to be promoted. You're more likely to be scrutinized in the workplace. You're more likely to be rejected from a job. Like, we've seen this where people do studies and they send job applications and it's like, if you've got this kind of name, you're more likely to get a response versus this kind of name. And so, you know, working on a lot of the, like, what I call the, like, soft stuff, if that makes sense, like, that underlying, like, sometimes when I explain to them, like, it's the underlying vibe, right? Like, to try to get people to understand it. It's like, systemic racism is the actual law. Sometimes it is in your face and it's like, you can't miss it, and other times it is so subtle, but the impact of it is so pervasive.
It's interweaved, and it can feel—it could feel like it's a normalcy when really it's a—it's a rooted racism, but because it's so normalized, and it's so normal, you operate in that space, and you don't even recognize.
Yeah, and so, like, for example, when we talk about, like, generational wealth and equality and stuff like that, you know, one thing I'm still doing research on, but is there a way to force people who, like, assess property values to, when they give somebody an assessment, they should be required to give people, like, if you don't agree with this assessment, here's what you should do with, like, specific steps. So that way they know that if they feel like they were unfairly assessed, they have a route to go through it. Because we saw this, right? If somebody, if an assessor knows that a house is owned by a Black person, they are so much more likely to assess it from a, like, a lower value
standpoint. Yeah.
Than if they thought it was owned by a white person.
Right.
And, you know, we've, like stuff like that, even though it's not in law, it's just, like, underlying
how it
right
is.
There. So that's, like, one thing I've been doing research on. The other thing I've been doing a lot of research on, like I said, is related to prison labor, because unfortunately you know, Black and brown people are imprisoned way more than their white counterparts, even though they don't account for the same percentage of the population. Yeah. And so, you know, part of the reason that we think about prison reform and reducing recidivism and, you know, looking at different ways to keep our communities safe is how do we, you know, how do we protect the most vulnerable? Because frankly, how we treat people in jails and prisons always permeates back into society.
Yeah.
And I always tell people this anecdote, and part of the reason I'm like, I kind of really saw this is I had an accident. It was like in Fulton County. It was like a minor accident, but if you're under 21 and have any kind of traffic violations, they make you go to court and like do all this like other stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, I was sitting in the courtroom, like waiting for my like case to come up or whatever it is. And this, it was two kids. One of them was white. He not only was there for possession of marijuana, but distribution of marijuana. He got 3 months of community service. I'm not even joking. A Black kid comes up, and he was sent 3 months in juvie. Like, I literally, like, with my own eyes, watched it in the most, like, explicit and extreme form possible.
Yeah.
And so that's why I always look at, like, things like the school-to-prison pipeline, like, making sure that kids have proper access to education, because only, like, 2% of the prison population have college degrees. Like, education is a huge disruptor of that.
Yeah.
And also thinking about like small businesses, how are we supporting minority owned small businesses? Because the reality is they already have to overcome so much to get there.
Right.
And how are we alleviating some of those burdens? So it's like, again, a lot of what I talk about when it comes to policy is like from a holistic perspective.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not like, here's like the magic thing
to
do it.
The magic wand. Yeah.
Yeah. But there are pieces we can like nibble
put
at
together.
And put together and like over time, like a bite here and a bite here and a bite here, eventually you kind of start to get to the core of it.
Yeah, I mean, even with, I mean, social justices, we have that also in the healthcare system. So it's kind of just a full circle thing about just it's more likely that a Black woman will die in birth, you know, as opposed to her white counterparts and then a little more likely for brown girls who would die in childbirth. And it's all having to do with the full circle of, you know, do you have access to healthcare, but then also your, you know, infrastructure is also, so you're usually getting hit with a couple of injustices. It's never just, I'm suffering in this one way because I am where I am, where I am racially or socially or class-wise.
Exactly.
I suffer in many points and not just the one thing.
And those add up, right? And then suddenly it's kind of like you're moving through life with a much bigger weight than somebody else who might not even have any weights attached to them at all.
Right.
You know, that's why when we talk about Medicaid expansion, you know, my House caucus and I, colleagues and I, when we focus on things like Medicaid expansion, we specifically talked about maternal mortality and how it impacts specifically Black women and why it is that way. Because, again, right, everyone struggles with access to healthcare.
Right.
When I talked about earlier about, like, these universal experiences. Mm-hmm. And now, okay, let's go deeper into that. It turns out, okay, in addition to that, there's a specific population that's impacted, in this case, Black mothers, who are facing, frankly, like, harrowing odds, and so much of it is preventable, and, like, what was it? It was, like, some absurd statistic, like, 90% of these deaths was preventable.
Yep, and it usually has to go with the physician, the way that they hear.
It's everything.
You know?
It's everything from prenatal care.
Yep.
You know, like, before a woman gets pregnant, during the time that she is pregnant, and then when they give birth, it's, like, it's just constantly at odds stacked against you, right? And again, all of that is preventable. If a person had access to good food and housing, check, right? Okay, you got that, great. And then on top of that, what about like access to good like vitamins and then access to good testing so that you can make sure there aren't any issues coming up? You know, is your diabetes in check? Is your, like, are your blood levels normal? Like those kinds of things, the earlier you catch them, the more likely you are to have a healthy
education as well.
Exactly.
To be able to say, okay, this is something is an issue here.
Exactly.
So it all just all hits on those same in that same realm. So it's always interesting to think about how one injustice is never usually one. It's multiple.
Yep. And it always impacts. I always tell them, like, if you can't get yourself to care about other people, at least care about yourself, because this will inevitably come back and affect you in some way, whether it's directly in your future pregnancy or in some other ways where now a child has lost a mom and now society is going to be responsible for that child, and we're going to fail them anyway. And so then you like perpetuate the cycle of like.
And our care, our foster yep. care system, is that have does that have enough infrastructure to take on
exactly.
The women that are dying if they didn't have anybody
correct.
To help or
exactly.
family? And so
exactly.
again, one
it
injustice
always comes back. It always
other
it's true, but it's true, and
yeah.
I'm like, maybe I can't get you to share my values of caring for other people, but I can at least get you to understand that this will hurt you too.
Hurt you. Yeah.
And so that's my hope. My hope is that bare minimum people start to realize that, and hopefully we get to a point where we all care about each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what measures have you taken or will you continue to take to increase transparency and accountability in our government?
Yeah, so during session, I tried to the best of my ability to send out a newsletter where I talked about like why I voted the way that I did, you know, big votes and bills that
yep.
came up, particularly the more contentious ones,
right.
Because I really wanted people to understand why I made the decisions that I had made at that time. And I always like tell people like, this is where you can watch session. This is how you can like come in. I'm actually doing a TikTok series right now on like electoral organizing. And
yes.
so like the basics of that. And sometimes it'll be about like a specific conversation that I saw. And so like, I'll stitch somebody's video and be like, yes. And, or like, here's why I don't agree with this strategy or tactic
right.
and where I think people's energy should be going. Especially now in like a presidential cycle where people have a lot of feelings about it.
Man.
And I'm like, I wish that we can even get a fraction of that attention and resources down ballot.
On the local level.
Because
yep.
those people are closest to your front door.
Yeah.
Like the turnout for our school board race was 2% of all voters. 2%.
Yeah. yeah.
Literally 2% of people decided who our new school board person was going to be.
Right.
And so I try like to teach people as much as possible about the process, because to me, the more we teach them, the more they understand their power. And
right.
when you don't understand this process, you're honestly ceding so much more power than you think you have. Because
right.
we talk about money in politics, we talk about lobbyists, we talk about all of that. But we as people actually
have
can
power.
Do all those
yeah.
things and
absolutely.
More in an incredibly impactful way.
Yeah. So like our president is not the reason your milk is $9.
Correct.
There's somebody
correct.
In your state that
yeah.
decides
yeah.
the price.
Yep.
Of
the price
food.
Of gas, like the price of food,
yeah.
the price of all that kind of stuff. And you know, I always tell people, I'm like, yes. And, like, sure,
yes,
he's
and.
Not responsible, but he's also the executive of 17 million employees. Is he directing, for example, the FTC to break up monopolies? Yes, he is. Great. Like, we've got one of the most robust FTC committee, like, you know,
yeah.
entities
yeah.
in a long time.
Yeah.
And so, like, I remind people that the reason I try to teach them about what that office means or what this means or what this level of government means is so that they know where to direct their energy and their
yeah.
anger. Because then if you start to focus on how do we reduce corporate greed, right? How do we break up monopolies? How do we fight for the worker? How do we unionize? How do we do all that kind of stuff? You're building power outside the system, but then you're then using that to then turn around and influence the system. But you can't do that if you don't understand it. And the more people understand it, my hope is that they stop ceding this power that they have
right.
And come on board. Because I don't think electoral organizing is going to save us, but I don't think that we should be surrendering it. Because that's just, we're leaving a lot of options on the table.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I know that you engage with your constituents over via TikTok. What other ways are you
yeah.
willing to engage or doing to
totally.
Do to engage with your constituents?
I host at least quarterly, like I call them open office hours, where I go to different coffee shops around the district.
Love that.
And I just sit there for a few hours and people are invited to come. And if we have like a big group, I'll do a legislative update and then they can ask me questions. If it's like a few people will just like sit there and have coffee and chat about whatever it is they want to chat
yeah.
about. Sometimes people will come and ask for help on something, so we take down their information and we like send them to the right people
yeah.
or work with them however that matters. You know, so trying to be like I don't expect everyone to make it downtown to my office,
yeah.
so that's why I try to make them all in my district.
Right.
I try really hard to partner with my colleagues as well to kind of increase our reach a little bit more.
Yeah.
And also, like, frankly, you know, making sure that we submit our reports on time and that kind of thing. And, you know, I always tell people, I'm like, when it comes to, like, money in politics, for example, like, all of our information is online. You can totally go look
right.
it up. You can, like, hold us accountable, because sometimes, like, this world is just so overwhelming. And, like, our constituents and the people who support us are our anchor in this. And it's totally, like, you know, you're as much a part of this as I am, frankly. So, you know, I try really hard, you know, whether it's like the office hours, the newsletter, social media. If I get an opportunity to come like at like something like this, I
yeah.
try to tell people about like, this is what's going on. This is why it matters. You know, please don't give up on this, because if this work didn't matter, so many of the like you know, corporate entities and the people who believe in a worse world wouldn't be spending so much time on their policies.
Absolutely. Well, what is one thing you want people to remember about you, just as a representative or as a human or whichever? what's one thing?
You know, that's like a really tough question, but I think the one thing that I hope they remember about me is that I did my best, and I'm always trying to do my best, and that I will never lie to people. Like, I will always do my best to fact check, to share information that I know to be true. But if there's ever a time where I, like, share something that, like, turns out to be not true or something, it's not that I'm intentionally lying. It's that...
Correct.
At the end of the day, it's like, I know people look at politics and go, like, all politicians are liars or whatever, but actually the reality is that so many of us value honesty and transparency. And if nothing else, like, I really hope people remember that I will always be honest, no matter how, like, popular my position is, unpopular my position is. You know, I will always be honest, and on top, you know, I will always do my best. And last but not least is that I always read the bills that I voted on, which I know is, like, you know, seems rudimentary, but it's true.
Hey.
And that any position that I take really was after a lot of thought. So.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for joining me today on the chair.
Yeah, it took everything not to, like, just
I tell them all the time, let me know if I'm swinging back and forth, because I'll be like, hello.
Yeah, no, like, I like want to spin around, so.
Well, thank you so much for coming to visit us
today.
Let us know where we can follow you, where we can be more in touch with you and follow your journey and all of those things.
Yeah, I am literally on every social media platform. It's Rua, the number 4, Georgia, so R-U-W-A, the number 4, Georgia, spelled out. I'm on everywhere, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, trying to figure out, like, Threads and Blue Sky and whatever.
Yeah.
Also, I'm always going to call it Twitter, so, like, people are going to have to deal with that.
I call it Twitter,
like,
too.
I'm
sorry.
It's just, like, it is what it is.
Sorry. But, I'm an inaugural member.
We're the same handle everywhere, so check us out. Please get involved. I actually just updated our volunteer link, and I'm currently hiring for folks, so if you're interested in working on my campaign, let me know.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for visiting us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.